Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. On the 9th of April, the Supreme Court of India ordered private laboratories to provide testing for COVID for free to anybody who required it. In addition to that, a number of states have also come out with price controls on testing as well as on personal protective equipment. So does this kind of economic measure ever really resolve the issue of a scarcity? To answer this question, I have Anupam Manur and Shambhavi Naik with me. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
So over to you first, Anupam. In India's economic history, has there ever been a case where price controls have actually successfully managed to resolve the scarcity of an essential item?
There's a short answer and a long answer to this. The short answer is no. The long answer is absolutely not. but yeah, price caps don't work. I think our entire history of Indian economy is a testament to that one singular fact. Price caps, central planning, etc. do not work. And if we, you know, kind of look beyond the immediate kind of humanitarian concerns, which is kind of mind-boggling and probably takes center stage, and rightfully so, you will find that for a lot of aspects, we seem to have been, you know, traveling back in time, back to the 1970s, when governments suddenly think that you can control everything, you can plan exactly for which kind of activity should be allowed, which kind of activity should not be allowed, how should the economy function, at what prices should various things be sold, etc. Now, the big problem with all of this, of course, is that all of this is looked at as a, you know, a partial equilibrium analysis. So you kind of think that transportation is risky, so we will not allow that, but selling vegetables is essential, so we will allow that. Now, I understand the need for lockdowns. I understand the need for a lot of these policy responses, but it's just that things don't work this way. I mean, trying to plan for some of these things don't really work. And we've seen kind of already, you know, various kinds of symptoms of failure in all of this. But that's the overall kind of central planning mindset, right? That the government has not been able to come out of that mindset where it thinks it can control everything else in the economy and, you know, design markets, if you please. And we find that, you know, obviously that doesn't work. Even in times of crisis, that really, you know, I don't think that should work. There are better ways in order to achieve the same set of outcomes. Again, you find, you know, that old adage which says that it's not, you know, the intentions are still good, but the intentions don't matter here. It's outcomes that matter. So you find that irrespective of what intentions are, you're trying to put price caps on testing or putting price caps on face masks or hand sanitizers or dictating that these things should be free will not achieve the desired outcome. So that's, I think, the main problem here.
Sorry, Anupam, I had a quick question.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get a clarification on what Anirudh asked. The price caps, is it to solve scarcity or to solve equitable distribution?
It's an affordability issue. It's not really a scarcity issue. I mean, in fact, if anything, we know, I think we understand very well that once you put a price cap on a particular product, it's only going to accentuate the scarcity rather than relieve it, right? I mean, so you know that if there is a massive shortages of masks and hand sanitizers, the reason for the price increase in the first place, putting a price cap on it will not suddenly increase supply. The only way to increase supply is allowing suppliers to charge the price it takes to manufacture this, suddenly to ramp up production, etc. You need, again, going back to, you know, the Econ 101, you need incentives at a moment like this. Try to think of, you know, what will happen for someone who's manufacturing face masks. They are also going through, you know, some, I'm sure, extreme trouble in order to manufacture something, trying to put together a labor force and, you know, organize various aspects of the production process.
Yeah, it's not going to be raw materials, for example, which
getting raw materials
come from China.
Exactly. So there's a shortage of raw materials, right, Shambhavi?
Yeah, there is a shortage of raw materials. Obviously, the prices have gone up for the raw materials themselves, which means that the prices for the final product should also go up. But we are still, I mean, the price controls that the government has put in and some of the rate contracts that they have had, which, I mean, rate contracts are annual, right? So we are still looking at those from last year's prices. Which is crazy because at this point of time, the situation is so volatile. All global supply chains have been affected. So all prices have gone up.
Yeah, precisely. I think so. Just for, I mean, clarity for anyone who's not been, you know, reading the newspapers daily, the price cap on face masks was what, at 8 and 10 rupees for a 3-ply mask. And then there's something called a melt blown face mask, which I have no clue what it is. We'll get Chambhavi to explain it probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's at 16 rupees, the price cap, right? So what is a melt blown face mask, by the way, Chambhavi?
So there are two types of the surgical masks. There's 2-ply and there's 3-ply.
Okay.
And the plies obviously refer to the number of layers in it. And then the 3-ply has this melt blown layer in the middle, which basically acts as the filter. So that's the best of the surgical mask. We also have 4-ply. But the melt blown layer, that technology is mass manufactured in China. And so we source a lot of the melt blown layer from there.
So I have what might seem like a fairly basic question, but if it's known from experience that imposing a price cap doesn't exactly help people get their hands on these masks, then why do governments keep doing it?
It's a measure that will look good.
Hmm.
It's an easy answer that will also look good with your core voter base. So partly that, partly I don't think also people understand the economics of it. There's an aggrandizement of egos in the political sphere that, I mean, I think a lot of politicians genuinely believe that they can control for these things, that they can design markets according to their will. And they think that, you know, I'm an elected leader and a representative of the people, and therefore I can actually dictate at what price something can be sold at. The power of the seat that they occupy gives them this false confidence that they can design markets. And sometimes it's a genuine kind of, I think, ignorance. It's not even, you know, false, this thing. But so they think that they can do it, and therefore they go ahead and do it. And a lot of times the ripple effects are, you know, much later on, and they don't even see the direct effects of their own, the consequences of their own actions. So that's what happens in economics.
In this case, though, we're already seeing the ripple effects, right, Doc? Have people been able to get their hands on more PPE? Has the availability of testing kits increased because of the price controls?
So the PPE and the masks, for example, we have been following since January, right? And we know that there is a scarcity globally as well as in India. And the price controls really don't help, because this is not even a government versus private player within India competition, right? You're competing with like international governments. You're competing with the US and Europe, which, if, I mean, there was this thing yesterday about, oh, we are getting bad PPE from China. Other people are bidding much, much higher than what we are on those. And like Anupam will tell in his Econ 101, right? If you bid higher, then you will get better stuff. Mm. So there is a scarcity that has come in, mostly because we are forcing people to charge lower than what they've already invested in. At one point of time, in January, I think when India wasn't really that much affected, and obviously other countries were, there was China, Hong Kong, Singapore, etc. And suppliers and manufacturers were setting up to ramp up production. Because they were seeing that international market rates of masks, for example, were like at 25 or 26 rupees. And this is a 3-ply mask, right? People made investment on the basis that they're going to sell it at that price. And then suddenly you come and say that, no, you're going to ban exports. And so people start selling in India at a lower price. Yeah. And then you come and say, no, we're going to put a price cap. So people are not going to sell. Come on, it's very simple, right? People are not going to sell.
Yeah, it's you kind of understand how this happens, right? So when you have Indian manufacturers face a price cap and the rest of, let's say, manufacturers across the world don't, they're obviously going to get bid, you know, they're obviously going to bid higher and probably get far better kind of supply. Mm-hmm. And we're going to bid far lower because you think that if there's 16 rupees, for example, is the price cap, and you keep some reasonable profit, etc., and then you're going to bid far lower per item. So that's invariable. Same thing with, let's say, with hand sanitizers, right? If Right now, the price cap, I think, on a 200 ml bottle is 100 rupees. And so essentially, if there's going to be a shortage, prices go up, manufacturers will start doing other kind of tricky stuff, which you don't want. I mean, I think the safe, for example, I mean, if I was a manufacturer, I would just probably start diluting it. Instead of putting whatever the required 70% alcohol, I would put 50% alcohol, right? And probably sell this 20% alcohol in the black market for people who want to drink. But No, I know, but I'm just saying how would one think, right?
And
I'm going to start diluting this thing, and you're going to get the degraded quality of your product, and that in fact is going to do far worse to the very same people that you were trying to protect. So, I mean, these arguments I've made over the years for 100 different things. It's just that during a crisis, it's not that economy goes away or economics goes away. The economy has been made to go away at the point, and it's taken a second seat. But unfortunately, economics doesn't go away. The principles stay exactly the same whether it's a crisis or normal times. When there is a shortage, when there's a shortage of supply and there's high demand, prices will go up. It's impossible to kind of contain that. So there are better ways to do this. Now, again, having said all of this, the standard kind of response we get to something like this is, this is a problematic thing. What is the solution then? Let's say, just dealing with face masks and hand sanitizers, let's get to the testing kits later. But I think it's kind of easy. I think the only kind of agency at this point which has far bigger resources than anyone else is the government. So the government should put out a tender for some 10 million face masks, so whatever the scale is required, and for X amount of hand sanitizers, X number of ventilators, etc. 20,000 ventilators, for example, make a real competitive market bid, and then let private players use that as an incentive to go out and manufacture things, and they can then do that way, right? That's a solution. There is a solution. And that's the way to do it instead of trying to put price caps on it.
Yeah, so they just put a tender out, except that the tender also says that, price cap.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, the tender will also think in the same way. They can't put a price cap on one side and then put a tender with a massive this thing. Then, that's creating another form of distortion, right? No manufacturer will ever supply to the retailer, but everyone wants to supply to this thing. So, I mean, if you have a price cap, then the tender will also have to kind of adhere to that same thing. So I'm saying remove that price cap and then make a reasonable tender with market competitive prices.
Okay, so fair enough. Now we have a sense of how price controls actually work. I also want to understand how import and export controls affect the availability of items like this, right? Because as mentioned earlier, export controls were imposed on face masks. And we're also seeing in this global environment where there's a sudden resurgence of economic nationalism that sometimes imposing import or export controls can lead to retaliations from other countries that might mess with absolutely crucial supply chains. What are your thoughts on the matter?
You kind of put me on the spot. This is a really difficult question to answer, and it's obvious. I mean, the temptation is always there to kind of say, if there's a manufacturer of something as essential as face masks at a time like this, then we should ensure that Indians get it first. And then on top of that, these are not policies in isolation, but it is, a combined sort of thing, what works together. And therefore, you first say you can't export it, where you will get a far higher price, and you force them to sell domestically. And then you put a price cap on domestic retail kind of sales.
So what if instead you impose a export control and then say that you can sell it at whatever price you want in India, but you cannot sell it abroad? How would that work, for example?
There will be a point of time, where even there, I think you will run out of incentives to produce purely domestically. I mean, the market is not infinite. So you will have, that's better than having both, obviously, but it's still not ideal. The way I would design it is in such a way. Now, let's say you can assume that the purchasing power outside of India is higher than India, and therefore, if you allow for unfettered exports, then every bit of the production that we make might go out of India. Okay, that's an extreme assumption. But let's assume that to be true for the moment. Now, that can again, I mean, I think in a public health emergency, that is not ideal. So even though probably the principles of economics would dictate as such, but you could, I think, be kind of creative about this. You can say that you will be allowed to export, a ratio of 1:10. So for every 10 masks, I mean, I'm pulling these numbers out of my hat, right? I've not given it more thought than 2 seconds that I've been speaking. But the idea is that, if you, for every 10 masks that you sell domestically, you can export one. And that way, I think you can create the correct kind of incentives for manufacturers to this thing. So, you get double the price, let's say outside of India, but you're also serving domestically and there is no price cap, which means, I think that's a slightly better solution than status quo, but again, you need enough thought put through this. But at prima facie, for me, that kind of makes sense. Of course, it makes sense because I said it right now.
Okay, Doc, over to you. So, can you tell us a little bit about how the supply chain works in terms of testing kits? Now, a lot of Indian companies are manufacturing testing kits at much lower prices. But at the same time, India is also importing testing kits from abroad, and they don't necessarily seem to have reached the places where they need to be yet. How are price controls or import/export controls impacting the supply situation?
Right. So when we started with the testing, we were getting, so the Indian government was getting kits from the US and I think also Germany, because we still had to develop the in-house kits. And I think the research for that started in around Jan. But it has obviously taken a while for Indian companies to come up with their own kits. So initially we were getting everything from outside. And then now we have given permission to companies within India to make the kits. And these are the RT-PCR kits, not the antibody kits that I'm talking about. So these are the RT-PCR kits. And we still haven't been able to ramp up manufacture, because the way this has, I think, worked is that a lot of the companies who are making the actual design of the kit do not have manufacturing capacity. So then they have to tie up with somebody else. There has to be a third financer who can actually finance operations. So it has taken a while for that to be set up. As a consequence, we obviously do not have an indigenous stockpile of the kits. And so we are now looking outside to buy them. Hence, we have getting the shipment from China, the ones I think from China, we are getting both the antibody test as well as the RT-PCR test coming in. I think initially when we bought the stuff from the US and Germany, I think the cost was about 3,000 rupees or 4,500 rupees, depending on which report you read, which is why I think the price cap of 4,500 rupees also came in, because that what the government might have been paying. I don't know. In some cases, you see 3,000 rupees as a cost. In some cases, you see 4,500 rupees as a cost. So that was actually the supply of the kit. So we are still low on the supply. I think some of the initial companies that got approved are still manufacturing enough to be sent to institutions across India to sell. The other problem also we had was a bottleneck of actually the testing labs. So that has been ramped up now. But at some point of time, there were bottlenecks on both. The actual supply of the test and the actual number of people who could do the test.
So even though bottlenecks are being eased now, so I'd like to bring you in at this point, Anupam. Is there a way that the government can step in to basically give a jolt to the system, right? Because easing up the bottleneck is not the same as yanking it open. Is there, for example, when Shambhavi mentioned you need to have a third source of finance, for example, is that something the government could do to help like increase testing capacity?
Yeah, so you're right on one count on the jolt to the system, and the government did give one massive one for that. But unfortunately, it was a negative one. And unfortunately, I think the kind of bad economics has followed this entire testing saga from the very beginning. Originally, you kind of had a situation where the government said that private labs should not be allowed to test. It's only, a monopoly of the government. And once they realized that they obviously do not have the capacity to test in the large numbers, I think they were just about able to do 1,800, but they could do something like less than 10,000 tests per day or something of that sort. But anyway,
within the 11 government and 60 private labs that we had at some point of time, we could do 10,000 tests a day.
10,000 tests a day. Okay, there you have it. But which is woefully inadequate for a population of India's size. And so then they kind of opened it up for the private sector. And when they did so, I think you initially had, even ICMR, which says we open it up for private testing as long as, they meet a few criteria, which is absolutely fine. That's testing, setting standards. But then they put, they put out a statement saying that, but we urge the private players to provide it for free. Now, I mean, that was just a statement such as that can create massive distortions in the in the market, right? Now, people will expect it to be free, saying, oh, if ICMR thinks it can be free, then it probably should be free. And therefore, you know, the level of trust in private testing centers will go down, saying, oh, they're profiteering, etc. So that by itself was a problematic thing. And if that wasn't enough, you had then the Supreme Court stepping in, I think, one of the most classical cases of judicial overreach that we've seen in the recent past. And we've seen a lot of it. Mind you, and there was a PIL which basically said, "Oh, you know, the private testing, private labs are testing at a high price," and then the Supreme Court steps in and says, "No, it should be free." And you know, you please note the language that they use. They say that, you know, private medical institutions should be playing a philanthropic role during a national crisis and then contribute to the national.
You know, understand that private players have to pay salaries, pay rents, and have a bunch of things that they worry about as well. It's
I think the problem, and I'm probably, you know, I don't know if I'm there's going to be a contempt of court case for me, but I think because a lot of judges, etc., do not pay rents, etc., and it's all taken care of by the state, I don't think they understand this aspect that there is a very real economic constraint. It's not that they're not philanthropic or that they're not mighty-hearted, etc., but, you know, they have to pay salaries ultimately, and there has to be food on the table, which means they can't provide it for free. And even if they did, they could do it only for an extremely limited number of people before they go bankrupt. The last thing you want is the few people who are able to test to go bankrupt, right? So that's and at the same time, by the way, you had also a price cap on testing itself. I mean, there's a price cap on testing at 4,500, as Shambhavi mentioned. So, you know, at one hand, you're asking them for it to be free. And then on the other hand, you're putting a price cap. And then later, you know, the Supreme Court finally, I think there's a counter petition, etc., saying, guys, we can't provide it for free. And Supreme Court says, okay, then you got to, you know, you provide it for free only for the poor people who have an Ayush card. And for the rest, you can charge at the price cap level. So again, you know, you can readily imagine the kind of problems this will bring up. One is identification. I don't know how easy or difficult it is to get an Ayush card, whether everyone can get it. I mean, we know it's not difficult to get, you know, various other forms of government identification cards.
But is it as easy to get it during a national pandemic? This is a question the Honorable Supreme Court doesn't seem to have
concerned. Yeah, I mean, so there's lots of problematic areas there. So identification, as always, is going to be a problem. Are you going to, you know, open the doors for extra rent seeking? I mean, will I take 2,000 rupees from a person and then get 4,500 reimbursement from the government, etc.? So there's lots of problematic bits here. And then the Supreme Court said, okay, that at some point we can also consider that the government can reimburse some of these expenses. Now, again, the government is not very well known for these kind of reimbursements. And at a time like crisis, when they're, you know, actually handling with 100,000 different things, reimbursing private labs is going to be the last of their concerns. So I think we've really botched up this testing at a time when we needed to, you know, do probably 10x the amount of testing we're doing now. I mean, I don't know that if that number is correct, but we need to be doing a lot more testing. That's the only thing I know. The bad way to achieve that outcome is, again, trying to control for these things and put price caps in, etc. Now, as I said, I think there's better ways to achieve the same thing. One thing is, if you're really concerned about, you know, for example, I mean, I think this is where a voucher system can come into play, where every person who, for example, you know, a poor person who cannot afford a private lab can go up to a government hospital. Now, if the government hospital, they are providing it for free, by the way. And if the government testing centers and hospitals, let's say, are completely booked and they don't have capacity to do extra tests, you can, you know, they can send the people to a private lab with a voucher for that particular testing amount, right? That's one way probably to do it. The other way is just massively subsidize upfront subsidize private testing labs, right? And so that they can then provide it for whatever the price cap amount, but, you know, you give them an incentive to do so. So there are better ways to do it, but for all of it, I think you need to step away from this control mindset.
So the fundamental problem that I see with this government versus private testing is the assumption that whatever we do in the government is free. It is not free.
Someone it's the government is paying for it.
But people don't seem to get it, right? Because it's free to the end user. It almost seems as if it is free, and so it should be free for everybody.
But yeah, I think that's a massive problem, right? Yeah. Because the government provides something for free doesn't mean that there isn't a cost involved. It's just that the government is probably rightfully so has decided to absorb that cost when it comes to, you know, public health, and because, you know, public health is ultimately a market failure because it has externalities, etc. But the government has decided to absorb that cost, but it doesn't mean that there are no costs, which means that if a private player is doing it, you can't expect the private player to absorb that cost. Correct?
Yeah. And that cost will be transferred to something else. There will be something else in down the line where which we might not be able to afford because we are currently paying a lot for getting these tests done.
Obviously. I mean, there is a massive opportunity cost, right? Every rupee that the government spends on testing is a rupee that it doesn't have on for something else. I mean, even in this own case, even in the COVID case, forget about, you know, 3 years down the line that they don't have money to spend on education, which is going to be very much the case. But even at this time, it's, you know, 1 rupee that they don't have to, you know, towards an isolation bed or towards something else, right? Towards a development, I mean, funding research for development of a vaccine, for example. Yeah. So there's lots of things. I mean, the opportunity cost is always going to be high. So it's far from free. There are very real costs. There are opportunity costs involved. And you know, the government has decided to absorb it, which is fine. But you cannot expect private players to absorb that at all.
Yeah. I had a follow-up question for this whole... obviously, I do not agree with private labs being asked to pay for free or even for a later reimbursement for the government. But is there a threat that, and because we have seen this in the supply chain over and over again in the past 3 months, is there a threat that if private players can offer better money to suppliers of these testing kits, that there would be a inequitable distribution of the kits between government labs and the private players? Given that we know that they are resourced up.
Not at all. I mean, in fact, I would argue that it's exactly the opposite. As a general principle in economics, anytime that you pit a private player against the government always wins. For two reasons. One, potentially the government has an infinite amount of resources. That means, I mean, it can print money if it wants to. And two, it has, you know, the monopoly of violence, which others don't. So it can use the coercion of the state than a private player can. Three, I think the scale of the government will always be extraordinarily large compared to private. Again, the problem is, I think when people try to conceive of this, when you look at private versus government, we look at private as one entity, which is obviously not the case. Whereas the government is one entity, as in at least the resources come from one place. Whereas private players, there are hundreds and hundreds of small private players. So you're looking at one private lab versus the entire government. And the kind of bid that the government can make is, you know, extraordinarily large compared to what a single private player can. So even though, let's say, all of private put together can do more testing than government, each individual player can obviously, you know, do far less than the government. So when the bids are placed, the government will obviously place a bid which is far, far higher than the than any private player can. And also the scale, right? So one, let's say, private player will probably order for 50 testing kits, whereas the government will be ordering in the thousands, I mean, 10,000, 15,000, etc. So in terms of, you know, who the distributor or a manufacturer will prefer, they would always prefer 15,000 assured sales than 50 at a, probably even if you're saying they can provide a higher price, 50 at a slightly higher price or 15,000 at assured sales, they will always go for 15,000. So in terms of bargaining power, the government always has better bargaining power than any private player. I mean, let's keep Reliance out of this. That's a very tricky situation and we can come to that, you know, in a separate podcast. But any normal
private player, how different are they from the government is the question.
Oh, yeah. Is it really? We won't go there. But I think this is a blasphemous episode, Anirudh. We should not be putting this out, by the way. He took digs at the judges, the Supreme Court, the government, ICMR, and finally, I mean, to put the icing on the cake on Reliance. Yeah, I don't think...
I'm on a real ruler.
But I want to tell me, so that would depend on manufacturers having that kind of scale to be able to meet whatever are the government criteria, right? So we can't have small manufacturers who are making like 10, giving a hypothetical example again. So suppose that the private sector is buying 20 kits and the government needs 100 kits. If our local manufacturers are making only 10 kits, can supply only 10 kits say per day or per week, whatever, then the likelihood of them engaging with the private sector is going to be more than with the government. But if you have a bigger manufacturer, then you might actually consider working with the government.
Yeah, one would think so. But here's where the coercion of the state comes in. The state can say, listen, I'm going to give you this much. You better sell it to me, irrespective of what the other person is offering.
We have seen that not work with the mask thing. I mean, we have a shortage of PPE because they said that, no, we are going to buy it at this price, which was like really, really low. And then people are saying, no, we are not going to sell.
Yeah, so I mean, that's extreme cases. But in all probability, the coercion of the state will overrule and trump economics if it needs to. The state has been known, I mean, the Indian state especially has been known to forcefully. You remember during the, for example, when they put the price cap on stents, they didn't even allow for, you know, Abbott and Medtronic, et cetera, to exit the market. They said, you have to sell forcefully at the price that we say. And those guys didn't want to sell, but they forcefully made them sell. So, you know, you can do the, and if that, this is with a massive MNC, right? So if they can do that for that, I think you can do it with a small manufacturer. And there's multiple things, right? They can say, if you don't comply now, then, you know, there's always a threat that these guys might send a tax inspector or do a health inspection, which, you know, you can't pass, for example, if they have a wrath against you. So, I mean, this is where the coercion
of having your buyer be your regulator as well.
Exactly, right? I mean, so who will you choose? If you're rational about it, you will choose the government.
Yeah.
Especially if they're saying, you know, I insist that you do so.
Okay, so I think that more or less covers it, right? So we'll just wrap up here.
Yeah, I think we should. These are tricky times. These, you know, you don't have very clear answers of how to do things, but at least, you know, there's proven methods of what not to do, at least, right? We have ample evidence of what not to do. So at least that we should stay clear of. Sometimes you need to come up with more creative kind of solutions to some of these things. As I said, even for the export thing, you can be creative about it. You should be testing different things. I mean, not testing, sorry. You'll be trying out different policy options here. But you should not lose sight of the end outcome. I mean, in the attempt to kind of try and control things, you should not lose sight of the end outcome.
All right. And on that note, and hoping that the Supreme Court and the Ambanis never listen to this episode, thank you guys so much for joining me. And thank you for listening to All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is at IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle at takshashilainst or our website takshashila.org.in.